You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Friday, September 24th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we will recap an Orioles victory. They start the four-game series against the Texas Rangers with a 3-0 win on Thursday night. I'll get you the five things you need to know from that Orioles victory. Then, a little bit of a crossover here on the Locked On Podcast Network, as it'll be a crossover with me and Bryce Patterick. He is the host of Locked On Rangers here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And we're going to, you know, kind of preview this series. Of course, game one already over, but look at the last three games of the series as well. Talk about the pitching matchups most specifically, because there's a lot of, you know, kind of prospect pitchers that are going for these two teams this week. And then really we'll talk a bit about the AL Rookie of the Year race with Ryan Mountcastle of the Orioles and Adolis Garcia of the Rangers being involved. And we'll also discuss kind of the state of the rebuild for both teams. Talk about some top prospects, some filler guys, and just some general Orioles and Rangers stuff as both these teams sit at the bottom of the standings here as we wind down in 2021 and are in kind of the same boat. But all that and more is coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me every week to talk Orioles and get in on the action at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. So we start today with an Orioles victory. O's beat the Rangers 3-0 on Thursday night at Oriole Park at Camden Yards to open up a four-game set with Texas, another one of the worst teams in the American League. And with the 3-0 win, the Orioles get to 49-104 on the season, just one win away from getting to 50 here on the year. And I'm going to get you the five things you need to know from this Orioles victory, starting with the first thing you need to know is that Zach Lowther had a start that Zach Lowther desperately needed for the Orioles. Of course, Lowther making his major league debut earlier this season, and most of his starts haven't been great. And really his one good start, which came on Labor Day against the Royals, he did go six innings, but he only struck out two, and you know, his stuff just didn't look great. He kind of got lucky with some soft contact and even with some hard contact as well. And let's be honest, he came in to this game with an ERA you don't want to look at 9.61. But then Zach Lowther just really turned things around in this start with the Orioles. And the reason why I say he needed is because he had been getting hit around pretty hard as the O's were giving him chances. His last time out there, you know, 3 runs in 3 1/3 against the Red Sox. The time before that, 7 runs in 2 innings against the Blue Jays. So it was not going well for Zach Lowther, but that all changed on Thursday night. For Lowther, he had his best start in an Oriole uniform, plain and simple, by far. 5 scoreless innings for Lowther, allowing just 3 hits. He struck out 7. He walked just 2. Took him 94 pitches to get through it, but he lowers his ERA to 7.66 on the season. He only allowed 2 hard-hit balls in 5 innings of work. What a fantastic job it was by Lowther. One of the better starts from any Oriole, let alone from Lowther so far this season. And the 7 strikeouts, just super impressive. And how about 14 whiffs in the 94 pitches? 14 whiffs, one of the best numbers we've seen from an Orioles pitcher really in the last 2 months, it feels like. The pitch that was working for Zach Lowther, well, there were really two of them. The first one, that 4-seam fastball, threw it just about half the time. 48 of his 94 pitches were that fastball. He got 8 whiffs on that pitch. And we know Zach Lowther does not throw hard. He was sitting around 91, got up to 92, and you know, touched 93 once in the game. But you know, he's sitting about 90, 91, maybe 92 for most of the day. And that's what you can expect from Zach Lowther. And that didn't matter. The lower velocity didn't matter. He was hitting his spots. He got 8 whiffs. He got 8 called strikes on the pitch. He got 7 foul balls. He got that ball to be put in play as well 6 times. Guys were going after that fastball, and they just could not barrel it up. And that was huge for Lowther. The reason why they couldn't barrel it up, he looked like the pitcher that has had so much success in the minor leagues over the past couple of years. Yes, he's throwing 90 to 91 on his fastball, so you can't really blow it by guys in the middle of the zone. So you got to hit the corners and change speeds well. That's exactly what he did. He continued to hit the corners with his fastball. The Rangers offense just didn't know what to do with Zach Lowther. And then that number 2 pitch, the Zach Lowther curveball. That thing was on another level on Thursday night. Now, he didn't throw it a lot. You know, he kind of split up the rest of his off-speed pitches. It was 48 fastballs and then 19 curveballs, 17 sliders, and 10 changeups. But the curveball was that number two pitch, and he got five whiffs on that curveball. It was great. He dropped it in the zone three times. He got five whiffs. That thing was just fantastic. It was sitting, you know, 75, and it did run up to about 77, 78 at times, but it's a huge drop-off from the 91-mile-per-hour fastball. He had guys kind of looking silly at times, swinging and missing at that curveball five times on the night. He worked it in, he worked it out, he worked it down, he was throwing it to righties, throwing it to lefties, and he had confidence with that pitch. And, you know, the changeup was okay, and, you know, the slider wasn't very good. He threw it 17 times. It kind of wasn't a super competitive pitch, but his other three pitches were solid, and the fastball-curveball combo was fantastic. And I know, listen, I know this isn't exactly a fantastic lineup, and when Lowther's faced good lineups like the Blue Jays and the Red Sox this year, he's gotten hit pretty hard. That is not that. The Rangers lineup, not great. You look up and down, 1 through 9, similar to the Orioles lineup. It's honestly worse than the Orioles lineup. It's one of the worst offenses in baseball are the Rangers. So, you know, there's a little asterisk by this Lowther start. But overall, I mean, he was really, really good in this start. And you got to give him credit. You know, I was a little worried about him, but this is great. He should get one more start. It's potential for two, but he probably has one more start this season with the Orioles. If he can build off this one, have another good start to end the year, that puts him in a really good spot heading into 2022. Second thing you need to know is that, you know, the Orioles had a shutout victory. That means the bullpen did its job as well. And it started with Mike Baumann, who wasn't great in this one, but he did end up with a zero on his plate. He came in the sixth inning to relieve Zach Lowther, went an inning and a third scoreless, one hit, two walks, no strikeouts, 26 pitches for Mike Baumann. He got himself in a jam, a couple of base runners in that seventh inning. He had to be relieved by Cole Sulcer, who did a fantastic job. He retired all five batters he faced with a couple of strikeouts, got out of the jam in the seventh, and then Sulcer worked a 1-2-3 eighth. And then Tyler Wells came in, no strikeouts in the ninth, but he put up a zero, gave up a two-out single. That was it against Wells, who picked up the save. But back to Baumann, who did have his struggles again, but you'd like to put up the zero. And he goes 26 pitches, 17 fastballs, 7 sliders, 2 curveballs. And, you know, he only had one whiff. It came on the slider. There wasn't a lot of called strikes. He really was not in the zone a lot. The command was bad. But he at least kind of worked through it in the sixth inning. Now, he didn't work through it in the seventh inning. Cole Sulcer had to come in and save the day for him. But, you know, it hasn't looked great from Baumann since that really, really good first outing when he threw the, you know, almost 4 scoreless innings. But at least he leaves with a zero out there and get a little bit of confidence. But definitely not the swing and miss stuff we thought we'd see from Mike Baumann here early for the Orioles. Third thing you need to know is that Austin Hayes just continues to do it. Hayes with a 2-for-4 on the day, including a solo home run, which was a nice little bit of insurance in the bottom of the eighth inning that gave the Orioles their 3-0 lead. Home run number 22 on the year for Austin Hayes. With that 2-for-4, he ups the average to 257, OPS to 779. He is just red, red hot in the month of September. He is finishing his season so great. I feel like he is a thing you need to know in every single game at this point. He just continues to swing the bat so, so well for the Orioles. Fourth thing you need to know in this one is that, you know who else went yard? Ryan Mountcastle. He continues to put on a show and keeps his name in that running for the AL Rookie of the Year. He hit a solo home run in the fifth inning, his 31st of the season. He went 2-for-4, also had a single in this game, did strike out once, but was looking good at the plate as well. His home run was a rocket to right center field. Frankly, Hayes' home run was a rocket to left field. Those two and three in the lineup, looking mighty good, especially on a night when, you know, Cedric Mullins goes 0-for-3, Trey Mancini in the four spot goes 0-for-4. Those two did enough for the Orioles offense in this one. And the fifth and final thing you need to know from the Orioles 3-0 win over the Rangers is that, you know, shout out to Ryan McKenna in this game. Got the start in the number 5 hole in right field for the Orioles, went 1-for-4 with a double, a strikeout, and a run scored, but he had 3 hard hit balls on the night. Ended the night thinking he probably should have had a 3-hit day and only had the 1 hit on the double, but also made a hustle play on the Orioles' first run of the game, I should say. Runners on first and third with one out in the fourth. Richie Martin squares the bunt on a safety squeeze and gets the bunt down, and McKenna comes racing home, no play at the plate, sliding in for the Orioles' first run. He's got that hustle, the swing looked good. good. Obviously, he's very good defensively in right field. And I know he's only hitting 184 this year with a 562 OPS, but he hits the ball hard when he makes contact, like he did on Thursday night. And I still have hope for Ryan McKenna. And again, you know, I saw this comparison made by the Masson Orioles account the other day, but his numbers in his, you know, first year or so in the big leagues, very similar to how Cedric Mullins' MLB career started, with all the struggles. And, you know, he had the speed, he had the defense, he, you know, had the grit out there at times. He did the little things, but just couldn't be consistent with the bat. And then Mullins finally broke out. Can it happen for McKenna as well? You got to remember, McKenna, honestly, a higher ranked prospect than Mullins was at one time. And so, you know, maybe it can happen for Ryan McKenna. We definitely saw flashes of what it could be in the Thursday night win. But it was a victory for the Orioles. They win it 3-0 in Game 1 over the Texas Rangers, starting off a four-game series on the right foot. But, of course, these two teams kind of in the same boat right now. Both teams with, you know, less than 60 wins on the season. Both teams in last place. Both teams in the middle of a rebuild at this point. And both teams were much, much better about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And so really wanted to kind of make a comparison between these two teams. It's the perfect time to do it. They're playing four games. We can talk about the series while also talking about these two teams and their rebuilds as a whole. So we've got a little crossover episode coming up for you here. Bryce Patterick, who is the host of Locked On Rangers here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It'll be me and him going back and forth. They're talking about the pitching matchups for this weekend's series and how a lot of these guys could be potential future pieces for these two teams. We'll talk a bit about, you know, the rookies this year between Ryan Mountcastle and Adolis Garcia. How are they looked at by their teams? We'll talk about former Orioles prospects on the Rangers, former Rangers prospects on the Orioles. We'll talk about the top prospects in, you know, each of these team systems and how the rebuild just overall is coming together for each of these teams. So that's coming up. We jump right into it after the break with Bryce Patterick, the host of Locked On Rangers. So we'll get back to talking Orioles and Rangers in just a second, but first, slow is just right if you're on vacation, a sloth, or describing QuickBooks. Huh, more like slow books. It sucks you in. It slows you down with manual processes, integration difficulties, and glitchy delays that leave you scrambling for the numbers you need. Now is the time to make the switch to NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system, because NetSuite gives you visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and more. It's everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time, no matter how big your business grows. Failing to switch to NetSuite will leave you stuck trying to make sense of your books while your competitors sprint ahead. 93% of surveyed businesses increase their visibility and control since switching to NetSuite. And right now, special financing is back. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to switch today. So head to netsuite.com/lockedon right now. Get special financing at netsuite.com/lockedon. That's netsuite.com/lockedon. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by Built Bar and all of their delicious flavors of protein bars. There truly is something for everyone, whether it's you like coconut, maybe you like raspberry, maybe you like mint brownie, maybe you like German chocolate, or many, many more. So many delicious flavors. It really feels like you're eating a candy bar when you bite into a Built Bar. But here's the thing. The bars are healthy too. That's what makes it so great. Most of these bars have 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, and only about 4 or 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 or 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty, and all healthy. And Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team, so that's pretty cool. So go to BuiltBar.com right now, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
We were talking about what the Rangers' long-term plans are with Adolis Garcia. And that's a really good question, because it's so weird to have a 28-year-old that's breaking out. Like, these are the things that are important to rebuilding teams that are hard to answer questions for the GMs. And these are the things that these GMs are thinking about. It's not always like, okay, who's this prospect? How he's going to do whatever, whatever. Like, that's why these GMs get paid the big bucks, because they've got to figure out these bridges from rebuilding to young, feisty, starting to compete team to actually good competitive team. And the question of Adolis Garcia is, is he going to be around when the Rangers are starting to compete again? Now, only just this year did general manager, or excuse me, president of baseball ops, John Daniels, and GM Chris Young start saying the word rebuild. Like, it's such a dirty word. Even teams that are like, have been losing for years are like, nah, I don't know about rebuilding. And it's like, you got the number one over, you got the number two overall pick last year. Like, you weren't good the year before. It's about time to say it. But I think Adolis is going to be there when this team is trying to compete next. They've said 2023 is when they want to start competing again, which that feels aggressive. Like, you know, a rebuild takes time. And if you try and, you know, halfway it means you're going to extend it more than twice as long, because then you got to go through and rebuild again and sell off if you do end up getting any guys who are stars in that time where you're, you know, mediocre and thinking that you're about to be good. You got to sell off those guys. So Adolis is a good stopgap for the next 2-3 years. I think there's not anybody, any outfield prospect that whose time he's taking away, whose at bats he's going to be taking away. I think he's the starter in right field next year, and maybe even in 2023. There's not a whole lot of big outfield guys on the market. There is some, I hesitate to even say this, but Levi Weaver of The Athletic, friend of the podcast, who I got to apologize and then not apologize for doing this on my podcast, wrote an article about what the Rangers starting lineup is going to look like in 2023. And he put Joey Gallo in there in right field, which like is hurtful to even consider that and have that almost assuredly not happen. And then this week, Joey Gallo came out of the dugout for his first, you know, media availability before this series on Monday, and looked like he had been crying and talked about how emotional it's been, like seeing this team and coming back, and Chris Woodward, Rangers manager, saying such nice things about him. But like all of this, like 18-minute diatribe to say, I think Adolis Garcia is going to be a really good stopgap for the next 2 years in right field, maybe some center field, because there's nobody there in the Rangers organization at the upper levels that's going to, you know, push him out that requires a lot of at-bats and a lot of attention there. So he's going to be around for a little bit.
Yeah, the stopgaps are important. Like, the Orioles have found a couple of those guys, like Ramon Urias, an infielder who's been like a really impressive stopgap. You know, everybody talks about Mountcastle on the Orioles. Ramon Urias, who was also a rookie this year, actually same Fangraphs WAR as Ryan Mountcastle this season in terms of rookies. So like, good stopgap right there. But I did want to, I know, you know, this series, how many people really care about this series? Probably not. But we did kind of mention at the beginning that, like, you know, most of the starting pitchers are like somewhat relevant for these two teams moving forward that are pitching in this series. So we'll include the Thursday game, even though it'll already happen by the time people listen to this. But I wanted to kind of like quickly, if you're cool with this, go back and forth. We'll go every game Thursday through Sunday and just a quick little decision. Is the starting pitcher who's starting for your team just a 2021 guy, a maybe future guy, or a definite future guy in terms of the pitching staff for each team? I think it'd be a nice little exercise to
I also want to give props to Taylor Hearn, because I haven't talked about this yet. Taylor Hearn, who had a pretty solid outing against the Yankees. He's had a little bit of a problem of, you know, once he's towards the end of his start, like the last inning that he's out there, usually can't finish it. But for the first few innings, I think he had, what, 5 shutout innings of the Yankees, which is
pretty
a
good
solid thing after a rough outing in his last start. But yeah, let's go. I like that idea.
Yeah, he's and Hearn's another guy. He's got some like interesting stuff on the left side. I know he hasn't had like dominant starts this year, but he's also been kind of reliable just to kind of get you through games, it feels like, which is like also important. Like, you need that on bad teams, especially.
You need a lot of those, and it's hard to get those guys. And he's a very positive development.
Yeah, start with the Thursday game. As you're listening to this, it already happened, and maybe these two guys got blown up, or maybe they had dueling no hitters heading into the 8th inning. I would guess that the first option is a little more possible, but for the Rangers, Glenn Otto. I know he came over from the Yankees in the Gallo trade. Where do you see him? Is he just a this year guy, a maybe future, or a definite future guy?
He's definitely got a future with the Rangers. I mean, they've got a lot of control of him. He is a Texas guy, which, you know, I like. He's a good kid. He went to Rice. He said he grew up being an Astros fan, and he's like, I have rightly, clearly, rejected that fandom now as a Ranger. So brownie points for that. Real easy brownie points, but still. I think eventually he's probably a long man. He's not had the greatest last couple of starts. His first start was great. The next couple have been a little more challenging. I think he's most likely of this like kind of guys who are in the rotation for like the fifth spot in him, Colby Allard, and AJ Alexi. Next year, I think he's one of the more likely ones to get that spot, and also might be, you know, split spot starting, like, you know, piggyback starting with Spencer Howard, because he's not going very many innings right now or next year, probably.
Yeah, for the Orioles, it'll be Zach Lowther in the Thursday game. Young left-hander, made his debut this year. Orioles draft pick, 2017, third rounder. Kind of a soft-tossing lefty, and he's been one of those guys who, you know, didn't walk anybody throughout the minors. And it was like, how's he getting guys out? He's throwing 90 miles an hour, but he just hit the corners all day and just didn't walk anyone. That has not translated to the majors just yet. You'll probably see that when you look up his ERA, which is almost 10.
Ooh, that's not great.
Not a huge sample size. It's around 20 innings, but, you know, it's he hasn't pulled it together. And again, it's a very small sample size, but in terms of the stuff and in terms of the guys' stuff that are behind him in the system, the guys in like AA and AAA right now, his best bet is maybe a number five starter moving forward, but I kind of put him in the maybe future piece category because the Orioles like him and drafted him highly, but it wasn't this regime that drafted him. And he just gets hit so hard sometimes, and he has to be perfect to be good. And he was perfect a lot in the minors. If he hits those corners, he's got a good curveball he really likes. His fastball has some run to it, gets some ground balls. Like, he's a really frustrating pitcher. Like, you're like, oh, we'll crush this guy. And then you hit 14 ground balls to second base, and everybody in the dugout wants to break their bats. But when he's not on the corners, that's where the 10 ERA comes in. And I will definitely put him in the maybe category. But what about Spencer Howard? He's the Friday starter for Texas, another trade deadline this year guy.
Yeah, Spencer Howard is a guy who had a lot of promise. I didn't hear much about him as a prospect, but he was a top 100 guy in pretty much all the places. Philly's top prospect for quite a while, had some difficulty. He was a reliever in college, made the transition towards the end of his college career to being a starter. Has four pretty good pitches. His fastball is solid. Relied on that a bit too much, I think, with Philadelphia. They couldn't figure out if he was a starter or reliever. And so when push came to shove, wasn't quite ready to be a starter in a pennant chase. And, you know, that was the best deal I think the Rangers are going to get for those two guys who were really solid this year. But he's going usually 2 to 3 innings. He's relying a little bit too much on his fastball. And I think that might mean that there's some lingering injury or something that's going on there. The pitch development needs like a little bit of work, but he's got some good off-speed stuff. Several, like three quality non-fastball pitches and a changeup, a curveball, and a slider. But he just needs to work on being stretched out, keeping that velocity, and maybe that pitch selection needs a little bit of work as well. But I think he's probably got the highest upside of any of these guys the Rangers have in their starting rotation right now.
Yeah, the Orioles, it's another young lefty who's always been an Oriole, Alexander Wells, 24-year-old. They actually was not a draft pick. They signed him out of Australia, which is not a path that you see a lot of guys take and get to the majors. Kind of, I want to say, was Grant Balfour Australian from the Athletics, or Liam Hendricks?
Liam Hendricks.
Yeah, Liam Hendricks is like the most famous one right now. But Wells is kind of like Lowther, and I put him in that maybe future category, but I think he has a much higher upside than Lowther. He has the same kind of stuff where he throws like 91 with his fastball. But what Wells has done, and which is why he's had more success in the majors this year than Lowther has, is like Lowther doesn't like to use his fastball to put guys away, whereas Wells is like, I will strike you out with 90 miles an hour because I will throw a bunch of changeups and curveballs. And then when I throw a high fastball at 91, it looks like 99. And he's not afraid to go at guys. He's got this big loopy curveball that he like has so like unbelievable command of. Like, he can drop into the strike zone whenever he wants, which is pretty impressive. And he's got this high fastball, and his numbers are elevated because he has to face the Yankees and Red Sox a lot. Big, yeah, powerful and right-handed lineups against a young lefty.
Also the Rays, literally everybody else in that division is like, yeah, just deadly lineups. Like, that's got to be rough.
It's a bad division for young left-handed starters because there's a million fantastic, big, powerful right-handed hitters. And there needs to be a stat for that, like the AL East something coefficient or something like that, that switches your ERA when you're a left-handed young starter. But I like Wells. I think he has moxie, and I really do think he will be in the Orioles rotation next year and like to start the year, and we'll get a real good look at him. I think we can go really quickly on the Saturday matchup because this is the easiest answers for each of us. Jordan Lyles for the Rangers, I would assume, is just a 2021 guy.
Yeah, I think so. He was a guy they signed to a 2-year deal the same time they signed Lance Lynn. They've had a lot of success on guys kind of like him that have shown some potential, that are a little bit older. It worked out with Lance Lynn, Mike Minor, and Spencer Howard. It did not work out with Jordan Lyles, but still a pretty good success rate on guys kind of like that, a multi-year deal. But he just hasn't quite lived up to it this year.
On the flip side, John Means, ace. Give the man the bag. Pay him this offseason. Give me John Means for many more years. So then we go to Sunday. And this is the guy who kind of interests me the most because he's been with the Rangers for the most time because he was an offseason trade guy in Dane Dunning. And I remember people being excited for him when he was in the rotation. And then did he go to the bullpen and now he's back? Like, what's the deal with Dane Dunning?
So the deal with Dane Dunning is he did have a relief appearance. He spent a couple weeks on the COVID list. He missed 2019. To an arm injury. So they're limiting his innings. They haven't let him go quite as far. That's why his starts and innings pitch look a little wonky. Usually they'll pull him at about like 85-ish pitches, just trying to be sure that they're extra safe. COVID hit this team pretty hard a couple weeks back when they went to Boston. And so that's honestly why Glenn Otto and AJ Lexi were getting some extended looks. They also DFA'd Kohei Arihara. He's in AAA now. They thought it would be part of their plans. Doesn't quite have big league stuff. But Dunning is solid. The most sure bet of all these guys, probably going to be a number three starter. Might be, depending on if they sign somebody veteran who looks really good in, you know, spring training. At this point, he would be my pick for the Rangers' number one starter next year. So solid guy, big part of the plans going long term. Nothing too sexy, nothing too flashy, but like really solid and reliable. And that's hard to find in a time like this, especially for the Rangers who have not done well developing pitchers in the past.
Yeah, and for the Orioles on Sunday, I know they haven't officially named a starter, but it's probably going to be Chris Ellis. They skipped his last start, which was supposed to be Tuesday, because of some arm soreness, arm fatigue, but he'll probably go Sunday. 28-year-old right-hander came up with the Rays this year. Then they DFA'd him. Orioles claimed him, like you should claim every single Rays pitcher that they DFA. It's a good plan, trust me. And he's been good. Like, so he basically goes between 4 and 5 innings in every start. I guarantee you, he will not pitch into the 6th inning, but I can almost guarantee you he will make it through 4 innings. So he either comes out in the 5th or he finishes the 5th. That's his start. He'll give up 1 or 2 runs. He'll strike out 3 or 4 guys. He'll walk 1 or 2. And it's not amazing stuff, but it's like, compared to what the Orioles have gotten from some pitchers this year, just to have him know that, like, we can expect 5 innings, 2 runs from Chris Ellis every time. That's the lowest bar you can possibly think of, but it's like fantastic for Orioles fans to see that. And he's still technically a rookie, even though he's that old. It's kind of the Garcia thing where he's 28, but he's just now getting to the bigs. So like, I don't think he's in the Orioles rotation plans because he hasn't been stretched out that much. But I do think come 2022, he will be in the Orioles bullpen. And we'll really get to see what his stuff is like when he's going 1 and 2 innings. And who knows, maybe he's kind of like a late bloomer guy. But that's, I guess that's reasons, Bryce, to kind of pay attention to this series, because there's still a lot of questions to be answered, at least among the starting pitchers this weekend.
This word from betonline.ag. We just talked about all their stats for who's going to win AL Rookie of the Year. You can go make your bets on that if you think they're disrespecting Ryan Mountcastle or they're disrespecting Adolis Garcia. With those odds we said, feel free to take advantage of those, make a bet. You know, we're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron. Besides our eyes, they're on bad baseball teams, and they will be. You know, we always have a soft spot in our heart for all kinds of different baseball teams. And, you know, teams are back to start their football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this year. They got an updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests. Go ahead to the website on your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 100% welcome bonus that is double your initial deposit just for signing up. Don't forget to use that promo code NFL100. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Be sure to use that promo code LOCKEDON. This episode is also brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Does this sound familiar? You got that one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on your phone. You've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before. So you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. The best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of that clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I feel like we wouldn't be doing our due diligence in a Rangers-Orioles crossover. We didn't talk about, you know, former Rangers that are now on the Orioles. It is Rangers East. I mean, not as much so as of late, but there's still a few names in there. Dylan Tate, a guy who, through no fault of his own, whenever I see his name, fills me with a white hot rage, because instead of getting Alex Bregman that year, the Rangers went on a winning streak in September for no stupid reason, with Tim Bogar as the interim manager after Ron Washington left, and they got Dylan Tate instead of Alex Bregman. There's also Marcus Diplon, who is a former Rangers prospect. How have those guys been doing this year, and are they in the future plans of the Orioles?
Yeah, Marcus Diplon, really interesting. 24 years old, came over in the minors, just Orioles got him, and, you know, he was pitching in the AAA bullpen, he was pitching well, and the Futures game comes along at All-Star weekend. And of course, as everyone expected, Adley Rutschman, number one prospect in baseball, was in the Futures game for the Orioles. And then they announced the Orioles have two players. And we were like, oh, could it be like Grayson Rodriguez, our top pitching prospect, or who could it be? It's Marcos Duplan. And everyone's like, what is going on? Like, who does he know? Like, who's he blackmailing to get into this game? And he pitches, and he didn't pitch that well in the Futures game. And everyone's like, who is this guy? He's not even an Orioles top 30 prospect at this point. Then all of a sudden, the Orioles call him up, right, in August. And he actually pitches well out of the bullpen. I believe his first five or six appearances were scoreless. He's gotten hit around a little bit since then, but he's still in the big league bullpen at this point. They kind of like him. He's only 24, and he's kind of figuring it out this year. In terms of Dylan Tate, he's interesting as well because Tate has had stretches this year where he looks unhittable, throwing 98 on a sinker that moves like a foot, with a good changeup and a good slider. He was the Orioles closer for a few weeks. You're like, how's anybody going to hit him? And then he throws these pitches like he did against the Phillies this week, and he's done a lot this year, where it's like a 96 mile per hour two-seamer with movement, but he starts it on the outside corner, and it runs right into the middle of the plate, and good hitters just smash it into the gap over and over again. So we're still trying to figure out what's going on with Tate. He'll be back with the Orioles. Duplan will be back with the Orioles. They'll both be in the Oriole bullpen next year. But definitely two interesting pieces that the Orioles still have hope for. Neither of them are guys they're just going to kind of cast off this offseason. So there's at least that. But staying with that, you know, this could have been Chris Davis too, of course, but he has retired. So I did want to ask about the one, just scanning the roster, I believe there is one of the former Orioles, now not a former Orioles major league player, but former Orioles minor leaguer. Jonah Heim has kind of made somewhat of a name for himself with the Rangers at times this year. He was Orioles prospect. They traded him to the Rays in 2016 for Steve Pierce at the deadline. And now he's with the Rangers, and at least for him, he's in the majors.
Yeah. The Rangers got him in the Elvis Andrews / Chris Davis trade. The other Chris Davis that very much did not work out.
And then he went back to the A's.
Yeah, and is still just about as bad there. Jonah Heim was always going to be the main piece in that deal. Really solid defensive catcher, a little bit of pop. Had a weekend, actually. I forget who was against. But it was like right after the deadline, he had back-to-back walk-off home runs, which, like, that's like an all-time great moment. Got 9 home runs on the year. The offense hasn't quite been there. It's been real hit and miss, mostly miss. But solid defensive catcher, switch hitter. 26, probably going to be Rangers backup catcher for a little while. I had no idea that he was a former Oriole, but, you know, that's fun. And, you know, I want to close this out on a very hopeful note. Give us a chance to talk about the next guy who just the top prospect, the guy who gives us the most hope, and, you know, what to expect from. Obviously, Adley Rutschman is your guy. When can we expect to start seeing him in the big leagues, and what is your hope for him long-term?
Well, he's ready right now. I mean, if the Orioles wanted to bring him up right now, he would be one of the best players on the team. Like, he came up to AAA halfway through the season and just mashed AAA pitching. He's been fantastic. He is truly the number one prospect in baseball. He should be up for opening day and be the starting catcher for the Orioles next year. There's no catchers ahead of him blocking him at all. He's good enough to be in the big leagues right now. If the service time rules are the same, we're going to have to wait 3 weeks or whatever it is before we see him, or potentially more if the Orioles really want to hold him back. And I want to get really, really pissed off on the Locked On Orioles podcast. But he's good. He's really good. He hits really well from both sides of the plate. He's a fantastic defensive catcher, but it doesn't take anything away from his offense, which I think puts him at kind of a next level. And, you know, the way people describe him is, I've heard scouts say this, and this is the way I like to kind of, you know, piggyback off of what they say. He's not a good hitting catcher. You know, there's a lot of prospects in the past that have been like really good hitting catchers. Matt Wieters for the Orioles was one of those guys. They're like, look at this catcher, and he can hit. That's why we took him in the top 10. No. Adley Rutschman is a fantastic hitter who happens to be a really good catcher. And it's like it's a very different distinction. He's like, a bust for him would be he plays out his time with the Orioles for 7 years as a starter and is just kind of a solid catcher. Like, that seems like to be the floor. And the ceiling is like multi-time all-star helping the Orioles win games again.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that sounds really nice. At this point, I think who's listed as the Rangers' top prospect is Jack Leiter. And as much as I love him, I just don't trust any pitching prospects a little bit because of the guy that we talked about earlier, Dylan Tate. But Josh Jung, for me, is the Rangers' top prospect. He's a former Texas Tech guy, so obviously already loved him. Like, I got to watch him quite a bit. He was there as a freshman when I was still at Tech. Really solid hitter. The only question about him, really advanced, really polished. Like, literally from the time he was 18, I was like watching this guy. I'm like, okay, this guy really knows what he's doing up there as a freshman in college, and that is some impressive stuff. There are questions about his power. He has absolutely just debunked all of those questions. He's only played in 69 games this year, which, while that's very nice, he's hit 16 home runs. Foot injury delayed the start of his season. Otherwise, I think he might be up right now. That's kind of why the Rangers went with Brock Holt / Charlie Culberson splitting time at third base this year, because they knew, or they had a feeling, that Josh Jung would be up at some point this year. I don't know that he's going to see the big leagues this year, but I'd be very shocked if he isn't the Rangers' everyday starting third baseman beginning next year. He's a guy who I think will be, you know, solid enough defensively at third base, above average hitter, with potential to be really good. He's a guy who's got great makeup, loves baseball, works incredibly hard, and, you know, keeps being a little bit better than everyone thinks he is. And those guys are the guys who I can't help but get really excited about, kind of like a Paul Goldschmidt. Not like necessarily I think he's got MVP potential, but like a guy who at every single level just outworked the predictions. And because he loved baseball, he's a smart kid, good kid, and loved the grind. That just made them better than people thought they could. So I'm really excited about Josh Jung. Jack Leiter, we'll see him some point next season in the minor leagues, not pitching the rest of this year, going back to Vanderbilt to go be a millionaire who also goes to college, and it's going to work out with some former Vandy guys this offseason. So definitely some bright future for both of our teams. Adley Rutschman, I'm very happy for you. Orioles fans deserve that hope. I hope that he lives up to every bit of what you expect him to. And, you know, I'm hoping the same for Josh Jung as well.
It's fun to have prospects. It's going to be more fun when they're in the big leagues. That's all I got to say about that.